Hi, I'm Bob Massa, and welcome to today's reading of USA Today, which is for Monday, April 22, 2024. On the front page, we have a story saying, experts spreading optimism, not doom, and many find reasons for hope on climate change. Elizabeth Wise wrote this story. Climate change may still be an existential threat, to humanity, but as Earth Day 2024 rolls around on Monday, some of the people most concerned about the planet aren't peddling doom, they're spreading optimism. There's plenty to feel good about, they say. Huge strides toward fighting climate change, decades of work that have led to other environmental disasters being averted, and the reality that hope can help fuel the actions needed to keep tackling the climate crisis. People assume that in the 50 years since the first Earth Day, we've made no progress, that we're in worse position now than we were in the 1970s, and there's no hope to environmental action, said Hannah Ritchie, a senior researcher at the University of Oxford in the United Kingdom, who studies sustainability in relation to climate change. Quite the opposite is true. Climate-friendly advances that would have been deemed impossible even 10 years ago are now commonplace, and three times in the past 50 years, humanity has faced and fixed massive man-made global environmental issues. This Earth Day, some climate scientists think climate change could be added to the list. That reality is still a long way off, but we've made more progress than you might think. It's as if humanity has to climb the world's tallest mountain, said Catherine Hayhoe, chief scientist of the Nature Conservatory and a distinguished professor of climate science at Texas Tech University. Wind and solar power are the cheapest electricity on the planet. Heat pumps come up in most heating and cooling discussions. Electric cars are now mainstream. Monday brings even more funding for climate-friendly causes, with the Biden administration announcing $7 billion in grants to provide solar power to more than 900,000 homes in low-income and disadvantaged communities. The White House said the president actions electricity cost annually roughly $400 per household over the next 25 years. It's like climbing the world's tallest mountain, Hayhoe said. You walk and walk and you climb and climb, and the top seems like it's never getting closer. But when you turn around, you realize how far you've come. Even Al Gore, former senator and vice president, who famously began warning Americans about global warming in 1981, feels a little positive. In March, he acknowledged to USA Today that things aren't moving fast enough, but said, we're gaining momentum, and soon we'll be gaining on the crisis itself. Next, we'll take this. It says, High Court has packed schedule this week. Trump, abortion, tattoos, homeless camps on tap. With cases involving Donald Trump, abortion bans, battling baristas, homeless camps, and scary tattoos, the Supreme Court enters a week packed with arguments that will affect everything from the tumultuous 2024 election to health care, the workplace, and policing. Most notably, the High Court will weigh in if and when a former president can claim criminal immunity for acts committed while in office, as Trump, who is currently on trial for allegedly concealing hush money payments to an adult film actress, fights three additional indictments on attempts to overturn the 2020 election and hoarding of classified documents. But Trump's broad claim that a former president can't face criminal charges without first being impeached by the House of Representatives and convicted in the Senate is just one of several high-stakes cases the nine justices will hear this week. Buckle up. Can a president get away with murder? Yes, if they're not first impeached by the House of Representatives and found guilty by two-thirds of the Senate, according to Trump's legal team. That's the core of the former president and 2024 presumptive Republican nominee's argument that he shouldn't face federal charges for alleged election interference. When an appeals court judge asked in January if this means a president can't face the prosecution for selling military secrets, peddling pardons, or ordering Navy SEALs to assassinate a political rival. Trump's attorney replied that criminal charges are only possible if the president is first impeached and then convicted in the Senate. I'm struck by how basic questions of presidential power and its limits are underspecified by the court, said William Howell, a political scientist at the University of Chicago. It's striking that a president 250 years into our nation's founding can even make this claim. Trump has warned that anything less than a total immunity from prosecution will open the door to an endless cycle of partisan prosecutions of ex-presidents. The immunity claim is a novel, complex, and momentous question, Trump's lawyers say. In addition to his ongoing hush money trial in Manhattan and the federal elections case, Trump faces a federal indictment in Florida over hoarding classified documents and state election charges in Georgia. Trump's appeal on Thursday is part of a larger effort to delay the criminal cases, Howell said. His overriding concern is not to define the limits of presidential power. It is to survive this judicial onslaught. Next, we'll take this. It says House at last approves aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. And Ken Tran wrote this story. The House approved a set of long-awaited foreign aid bills on Saturday that would send funds to Ukraine, Israel, and the Indo-Pacific region after months of it being stalled by Republican infighting. Passage of the bills could also cost Speaker Mike Johnson his leadership position and status as second in line to the presidency. The bills mostly mirror an earlier foreign aid package the Senate passed this year, but this one is broken up into pieces as an attempt by Johnson, a Louisiana Republican, to appease his conference by allowing GOP lawmakers to pick and choose what aspects of the bill they support. Johnson's foreign aid plan includes three bills that separately fund Ukraine, Israel, and the Indo-Pacific region, along with a fourth bill that includes various GOP-backed foreign policy priorities as a sweetener to entice Republicans to back the proposal. Those provisions would include seizing frozen Russian assets to fund the Ukrainian war effort, along with legislation that could result in a nationwide ban on the popular social media app TikTok. As bills pass the House on a bipartisan basis, but the legislation funding Ukraine proved to be the most contentious as U.S. support for Kyiv continues to fall among the House GOP ranks. The House passed the bill providing roughly $60 billion in Ukraine by a vote of 311 to 112. The Israeli bill also proved to be problematic among progressive Democrats who have called for continuing aid to the country over its conduct in the war-torn Gaza Strip, as international aid organizations warn of incoming famine in the territory. Lawmakers approved more than $26 billion in Israel funding and humanitarian assistance in the region by a vote of 366 to 58. Aid to the Indo-Pacific region aimed at deterring China was far less controversial, and lawmakers passed about $8 billion to the region by a vote of 385 to 34. The sweetener bill also passed 360 to 58. All four bills will be compiled into one package to send to the Senate, which is expected to approve the legislation as well. President Biden has vowed to sign the package immediately to send a message to the world. We stand with our friends, and we won't let Iran or Russia succeed. Passage of the foreign aid package also appears like it will leave Johnson's speakership in peril. Conservative firebrand Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican of Georgia, along with two other Republicans, are seeking to oust the speaker for working with Democrats to pass legislation. Green has declined to offer a timeline for when she would move to remove the speaker, but has previously suggested that she would do so the moment the House passes the Ukraine aid. Move over to money, and from money, we'll take this story that says Meta AI gets an upgrade. Llama 3 offers a search and new creation features, and this was written by Jennifer Jolly. All the big tech companies are trying to best each other with the, hey, look what our artificial intelligence can do now updates. And on Thursday, Facebook parent company Meta rolled out its latest upgrade in the version called Llama 3. Unlike previous Llama releases, Llama 3 has its dedicated website, meta.ai, where you can use the tool for free. It's a riff on the ChatGPT formula. No charge. Go and talk to it and see what it can do for you. The catch, of course, is that you log into with a Facebook account. Big day here. We're releasing the new version of Meta AI, our assistant, that you can ask any question across our apps and glasses. Meta Platform CEO Mark Zuckerberg said in a statement sent to USA Today. We built it into the search box right at the top of WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook, and Messenger. So anytime you have a question, you can just ask it right there. We're also releasing a bunch of unique creation features. Meta AI now creates animations and creates high-quality images so fast that it generates and updates images for you in real time as you are typing. Some of my friends already see the Ask a Meta AI Anything prompt at the top of our search feeds, but it hasn't shown up in any of mine yet. Meta upgrades typically roll out in this way, with some people get them right away while others have to wait. Will it change your life in any way? Absolutely not. Do you care about it? Maybe. So let's dive in. The most interesting thing I've seen Meta do so far is to generate realistic-looking animated characters and images that update while you're still typing in the prompts. Just type what you want to see, and the image begins to generate as you type. Here's an example. You want to see a curly-haired girl flying a dragonfly. Type curly girl, and it's there. As you can see in the examples above, the image continues to adapt to fit your narrative as you're typing. The only limitation is your imagination. It's like you can choose your own adventure, but with no scary consequences. What's really cool about real-time image generation is that it doesn't wait for the entire prompt to be written. Instead, it starts to see each object as you write about it and adjusts the final image in real time. This requires powerful hardware and software, which is fascinating to watch in action. What could possibly go wrong? It's a great time waster and obviously a very powerful tool. We'll have to see if Meta's lewd content filters are up to snuff. However, as that's a problem that plagues similar tools from Microsoft, Midjourney, and all the rest. Regarding guardrails, the most high-profile AI image generators from Microsoft and others have blacklisted keywords that allow them to generate images of famous people like movie stars and high-profile politicians. The data sets these models they use typically don't include normal people, so typing your friend's name into AI isn't going to produce anything that looks like them. There are always ways around these guardrails, though. Devoted users will likely figure out how to get certain celebrities to appear in images or even create NSFW, that says not safe for work content, using the system, which is something all the other AI image generators have been fighting against since day one. And Meta AI for searching and winning arguments with your friends. What about generating fake images that people think are real, like politicians doing the upcoming elections? I'm going to get back to that in a second, but first, here are a few other things the company says the new Meta can do. Act as a personal assistant. we believe Meta AI is now the most intelligent AI assistant you can use for free, and it's available in more countries across our apps to help you plan dinner based on what's in your fridge, study for your test, and so much more, the company wrote in a statement. I see this as a way to win arguments with people on the apps and in real life. Enable more powerful search. You can now use a Meta AI in feeds, chats, search, and more across our apps to get things done and access real-time information without leaving the app you're using, the company says. Create faster and more tailored images. You can create album artwork for your band, decor, inspiration for your apartment, animated custom GIFs, and more. During a video call demonstration earlier this week, a Facebook spokesperson, said he expects to use a Meta AI for fun and to be more social. To me, that means they're trying to make Facebook more fun for more than just our parents and make Instagram more interesting so that young people don't keep ditching it for TikTok. Harsh, but kind of true, even though Facebook still has around 3 billion active users per month, which is about a third of the world's population, according to digital marketing site Social Surge. Llama 3 will be available in 12 countries, including Canada, Australia, and South Africa, all of which are getting Meta's AI for the first time. So why is Meta investing so much in AI? Meta is doing this because having a large language model like Llama 3 means you can add new features to your apps, like adding AI to the search features on Facebook and Instagram. It adds a layer of smarts and can reduce friction between users and the apps they like. By building its own high-powered AI, Meta can also sell licenses to companies that want to use it for their projects. ChatGPT runs on the same licensing business model, where access to AI is granted to companies and their users for a specific fee. Meta stands to make a lot of money with an LLM in various ways, including advertising. Think auto-generated ads that appeal to you specifically, and selling access to this AI. Facebook has one of the largest stockpiles of any company's data, thanks to more than a decade of user-generated content in the form of posts, comments, replies, and so on. This data trains Llama in how humans talk and makes connections between words and objects, places, and concepts. The smarter it gets, the more helpful it should be. That's the theory, but I've been covering tech long enough to be skeptical at best. So let's take another look here at cruising altitude. Some rules of flying etiquette remain disputed, according to Zach Wichter. How can so many of you be so wrong? I've written about airplane etiquette before, and I've always thought the rules were pretty obvious. But it turns out, not so. Etiquette depends on a shared understanding of right and wrong, and apparently we can't even all agree on airplane armpit rests. I've always thought it was an unwritten but an absolute rule, that a person in the middle seat gets access to both armrests as a courtesy. However, a 2023 survey by online booking platform Kayak polled more than 1,000 adults and found that more than half of you, 57%, disagree with the idea that if you're in the middle seat, you get to claim both armrests, which is honestly crazy because in matters of decency, I am always right. Obviously, we travel a bunch ourselves at Kayak, and one of the things that we have noticed increasingly is the airport has always been one of the places where rules are super strictly enforced, but then rules are also out the window. Matthew Clark, Vice President of North American Marketing for Kayak, told me, you can have a margarita at 6:30 in the morning, but you can't bring more than 3.4 ounces of liquid through security. So, what's the deal? Who gets the armrests, and what are the unwritten and unenforceable rules of air travel? So, who gets the armrests? There's no definite answer. A disclaimer, I don't care about the survey results. I will stick by the adage that the window seat person gets to control the shade, the middle seat person gets both armrests, and the IOC gets to benefit from a little extra leg room and the convenience of standing up whenever they want to. But according to Kayak's survey, only 43% of air travelers agree with me. Even Clark said he was surprised by that result. This is what you get when you poll 1,000 people, he said, nodding to know to show how little common ground we have on things. Joe Schultz, 38, said he flies at least 2 or 3 times a month and is one of the people who disagrees with me. Maybe 10, 15 years ago, I was like, yeah, middle seat people, they should get the armrest. But now it's like, nah, it doesn't make sense, the Los Angeles resident told me. He said as airplanes pack more people into economy, he sees the armrest more as a physical barrier between seats than anything else, a line that's not to be crossed or infringed upon. Regardless of whether you choose to sit in the middle, I don't think you're entitled to the armrest, he said. As soon as that person in the middle puts their arms on the armrest, you're getting jabbed by their elbows. Still, with 57% of the travelers in Schultz's camp, a fair number seem to agree that the middle seat person should get both armrests. I'd say it's an unwritten rule, but it's written a lot, but just not the policy. It's common courtesy, Ryan Gregg told me. Gregg, an automation technician from Lawrence, Kansas, flies about twice a week and said he'll often switch his flight if there are only middle seats available. However, if he has no other choice, he expects access to both armrests. It's the one thing you get for being stuck there, he said. We may not be able to agree upon armrests, but at least 94% of us can agree that airplanes are not the right place to pop your pimples, according to Kayak. Actually, why isn't that number 100%? No matter their views on armrest issues specifically, everyone else I spoke to for this column agreed that being a decent seat neighbor is all that matters when flying. Just be a decent human being. You're stuck together for, depending on where we're going, quite a while. I just keep to myself and be courteous of others, Gregg said. Just respect each other's personal space, Schultz said. What we'd like to say is just be good people. Clark agreed. Traveling is a lot of fun and a lot of stress. We just encourage people to be good people to each other. Moving over to sports, we're going to take this story that says Royals WS hero gives players a platform. Bob Nightingale wrote the story. Eric Hosmer, the former All-Star and Gold Glover who helped the Kansas City Royals win their first World Series title in 30 years, may be officially retired as a player, but now he's hoping to make an impact in the game from behind the mic. Certainly he's got connections with Hall of Famer Cal Ripken Jr. joining Hosmer's Moonball Media as an executive producer for his last Doco series. Hosmer, who is being paid $13 million annually for the next 2 seasons by the San Diego Padres, started Moonball Media with his former Royals minor league teammate Anthony Cervitelli. Hosmer says he wants to be a vehicle for players to tell their stories and perhaps a voice to let players freely discuss topics in and outside the game. Obviously, my playing days are over, Hosmer says, but I still wanted to be involved in the game, and I wanted this to be player-driven. Having another outlet that players can share a unique experience with fans, enlighten them, shine light on topics without holding back. One day, Hosmer says he'd love to be back in baseball on a coaching staff or front office, but until then, well, he's hoping their podcast can be a baseball version of the popular Pat McAfee show. I can't get too far away from the game if you want to get back in, Hosmer says, so this is finding ways to create content and stories in different ways. You see how much fun Pat McAfee and his crew has with the football guys. He provides a certain level of comfort where they are not so guarded, and you see more of the personality of the players. That's what we want to be, and hopefully one day if that opportunity comes for me to be back in the game, I'll be ready. Next week, I have another Nightingale story called Cy Young Winner Off to a Brutal Start with the Giants. There were the late arrivals at the party, the ones who held out signing after the start of spring training, or in some cases even after it ended. Now, here they are trying to get acclimated into the mainstream of a major league season and so and so far it's a little rougher than they ever envisioned. Two-time Cy Young winner Blake Snell, who signed a two-year, $62 million contract with the San Francisco Giants on March 18th, didn't pitch a single inning in the minors before making his Giants debut on April 8th. So much for first impressions. Snell's start to the season has been disastrous. He has made three starts and has been terrible. In each of them, he is 0-3 with an 11.57 ERA, failing to last even five innings in any outing, while giving up 23 base runners in 11.2-thirds innings. The Giants have been outscored 34-6 in his three starts. While no one in the Giants organization is saying the decision to sign Snell was a mistake, it's easy to question whether they should have permitted him to open this year in the major leagues without making at least a few minor league starts. It was definitely an option, but I don't think I needed it, Snell told reporters after his last debacle Friday. I still don't think I need it. I just got to get better with sequencing. The stuff is there, so all the sequencing and pitching like I know I can. Once I start doing that, then what-ifs and all that will fade. The more I get in the zone, the more I have a better sequencing and understanding hitters, then the outcomes will be better. In a month or 2 months from now, we'll be talking about other things. Teammate Matt Chapman, who didn't sign until March but at least played in 11 spring training games, also is off to a slow start. He's hitting .205 with a .675 OPS in the other 20 games. Let's take a boxing story now. We're going to say with Garcia makes good on pre-fight victory remark. Josh Peter wrote the story. Mike Tyson stopped by Ryan Garcia's locker room Saturday night as Barclays Center in Brooklyn and apprised the shirtless King Rye before Garcia fought Devon Haney. Have you been eating bricks? Tyson asked. Replied Garcia, yeah, I'm going to eat Haney today. You look beautiful, Tyson said. Smiling, Garcia thanked the former heavyweight champ. And during a celebratory moment after Garcia knocked Haney down three times and won the fight by majority decision, Garcia asked, hey, where's Mike at? Mike Tyson came through. Tyson was a busy man during his trip to New York for the fight based on videos posted on his Instagram account. At one point, Tyson ended up shirtless on the streets and playful tussled with Shannon Briggs, the former heavyweight champion. He also visited Times Square and admired a giant electric billboard for Tyson 2-0, his personal brand of marijuana. Grow like Mike, it read. According to Tyson's publicist, Iron Mike will stop using marijuana while training for his fight against Jake Paul on July 20, but he didn't agree to stop selling it. A couple of state stories before we go. Connecticut, initial filings for unemployment benefits in their state rose the week ending April 13, the U.S. Department of Labor said. New jobless claims, a proxy for layoffs, increased to 4,589, up from 2,937 the week before. From Mass, we got this. It said, an archaeologist's examination of an Orleans conservation area is shedding light on Wampanoag history previously hidden in sight, according to the Historical Commission Chair, Ronald Peterson. From Vermont, we have this. Burlington kicked off a campaign last week to encourage a stronger community. The Acts of Community organization met April 16th to discuss the value of community kindness and encourage people to take the pledge. That's it for today's reading of USA Today, and I've been reading from the Monday, April 22, 2024 issue. And if you have any questions about the articles I've read, please call the Chris listener line, at 860-727-9579. I'm Bob Massa, and so long until the next time.